This is a top to you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
these
and
amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Well, hello and welcome, everybody. Welcome to episode 22 of the Air Raid podcast. I am your host, Aaron Roden.
I'm so not a raper.
And I'm joined today by Master and Commander Ben Varellen of Helms Alee and Varellen Amplifiers. So we're very excited to have him on. Thanks for tuning into the show. Of course, this is the show where we drop bombs of awesome into your ear holes. And we got some good stuff to talk about today. We're gonna be picking Ben's brain on where he's been. Ben has been a lot of places. That's true.
I'm a joke.
And he's looking at me like I'm some sort of fucking crazy person
because
right
you're
now.
Ugly and retarded.
But we're gonna bring him on in just a moment. But first, I'd like to apologize for episode 21 with Mr. Tito Ramsey. I was a little hungover. I don't know if you could tell, but man, I was not feeling well. And I got to the point where it was like one of those hangovers where your stomach becomes this bottomless pit that you need to fill with all the greasy food you can. And it was like, I wanted burgers, I wanted pizza.
I wanted, eat your babies, bitch!
You know, juice, anything. And I wanted to smoke cigarettes, like, end from end. You know, and it just never, never stopped. I had this insatiable hunger yesterday. And, yeah, that's right. We're actually we're recording episode 22 a day after episode 21. So we may be talking about some things that that happened in the past. So jump into your hot tub time machines and get back here. Anyway, yeah, I don't know if this is the forum to talk about the space-time continuum, but whatever. So, Mr. Ben Varellen, thank you for coming on the show. It's wonderful to finally get you out here.
Thank you for having me, Aaron.
Yeah, you're welcome. You are kind of our, I don't know if you knew this, I don't think I told you, but you are our pseudo-sponsor. Varellen Amplifiers is our pseudo-sponsor.
Proud
for the show.
Pseudo-sponsor.
Right, right.
Proud.
And he didn't pay me a thing to say that. But I am a proud owner of a Varellen amplifier, and I gotta say, it's one of my favorite amplifiers that I've ever owned, and I will never get rid of it, because the thing is just, I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Thank you, man. That's awesome.
And I say that coming from a spot where I have a, and this is gonna get a little gearhead dorky for a second here, but I have a vintage Fender Twin Reverb. That is a great amplifier,
yeah,
also. I mean,
absolutely.
it's amazing. But what I normally play is the Varellen, and
aww,
you can see it over there in the corner, right?
Aww.
The monolith over there, right behind you.
It looks pretty over there.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on the show. You are a busy, busy man, and it was hard to get you on here. And I think I hounded you enough. Where you were finally like, fuck, let me get this guy off my back. I'm just going to come to his house and record this podcast for an hour.
No, it's kind of the other way around. It's stuff like this is exactly what I would like to be doing, spending my time doing.
Right.
I mean, just to try and, the whole side of doing the amps thing that is totally mysterious to me is all the, you know, business, marketing, blah, blah, blah.
Right, right.
So,
well, you get a lot of, I mean, you've had a lot of press, a lot of really good press too, I might say.
Yeah, that's
lately
been very fortunate. But I mean, a lot of that doesn't require a lot of effort on our part, so...
Yeah, it's just, it's like players like me that are coming on to whatever they're doing, you know, whether you be a writer or somebody doing a podcast or an actual radio show, a real radio show, and just mentioning that it's, you know, they love it.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. I mean, that's got to be a really cool thing.
It is, absolutely. It's kind of amazing to me.
Yeah, yeah. And so you guys are based out of Fremont, the Fremont neighborhood here in Seattle.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, that's where the North Shop of Rellin Amplifiers is.
Okay.
My partner's shop is in Tacoma. That's where all of the woodwork and...
That's where the cabinetry is made for the amps and stuff. And man, you guys, the cabinetry is starting to get crazy.
I know that
really green one that you guys had with the what do you call that?
Spalted maple. What it is, it's Northwest maple that is actually diseased and
that has like a thick black line, well, a thin black line that kind of goes with the grain.
It's the disease within the wood, yeah. So it's got this real peculiar marble kind of thing happening with it.
Yeah. And what's the one, I saw a picture of a green one and it had like this like V shape, the grill cloth on it was like going at two angles.
Right. That one's a slanted baffle. So what that means is, the speakers, instead of facing directly forward, they're actually off on two different directions. So you get a little bit wider dispersion from that.
That's pretty cool, man. That's pretty cool. So you kind of dork out on the design of this kind of stuff, like,
I mean,
just figuring out like how much better you can make the sound, I guess.
There's that side of it, and more so than that, I think it just looks cool. Honestly,
oh, it does.
It's kind of just an eye catcher.
It looks damn cool. Yeah, like, totally.
But it really does do something, you know. It's
you just don't know what.
No, right. I know what, and what it does is just kind of makes it louder to more degrees, basically. So somebody standing off to the side isn't
right.
You don't have to be right in front of the thing to hear it.
Yeah, it's like not blocking the sound. It kind of sends it in all directions then.
A bit more
when
it's
on stage.
So if you're a guitar player on stage and you. Mm-hmm. You don't happen to be positioned somewhere that's directly in front of your speakers, you're not missing as much.
Right, right. Yeah. And you guys have done, I mean, recently you guys just had, what was the latest show that you guys did for Rellin Amplifiers?
Oh,
was that at Numo's?
It was.
Numo's here on in Capitol Hill on Seattle?
Yep.
And that was what, last month or something?
Something like September 16th,
I want
to say.
September, okay.
Yep. And we got a... Narrows to play that show, and Akimbo, and a new band called The Dark from town, and everybody had a bunch of Rellin amps, so it was
right,
cool.
Right.
Yeah, it was shockingly a good time. I mean, I spent 90% of it just being stressed out about, you know, they had this ridiculous thing up behind the stage, just, you know, broadcasting Rellin amplifiers, and it was just, I don't know, it just felt like a lot of pressure, honestly.
Right.
But
the night
went off great, and
yeah,
enough people showed up to sell out the show, and it was a good time.
Well, and Akimbo and your band Helmsley playing there, right?
Yep.
Your brother's band Narrows,
mm-hmm.
and they're kind of coming into their own right now also,
yeah.
I would say. Was it a sold-out show?
It was. They actually, they were trying to... That, you know, we had kind of low expectations for how many people would come to something like that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Numo's is a pretty big club. And
yeah.
So they do these curtain shows, which kind of drops the capacity in half.
Oh, really?
And
so they put up a curtain like in towards the back of the room or something like that, or
exactly, yeah.
Okay.
And then I guess so many people happened to show up that they had to lift the curtain and let more people in.
No shit.
Yeah, that was pretty exciting.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
The really cool thing about that night, though, was I wish it went a little bit better, but we raffled off one of our distortion pedals and,
really the big spider. Is that what?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
We raised all of, something like $160 for Beer Project, which was kind of like, I don't know if that's a drop in the bucket or not, but
no, that's cool though. That's
okay.
Really cool. Like there was enough people there that were like, I want that fucking thing. You showed me that a little while ago, the last time I went to your shop. Oh wait, no. It was a couple times. It was still when your shop was on Aurora.
Oh yeah.
And let me test out one of those things, and just sounded amazing. It's more of a let's see, what would you, because it's not really a distortion pedal, right?
Well, I mean, all those words are so subjective, but it, I mean, it's a distortion pedal, but it's probably best classified as a fuzz.
As a fuzz pedal.
Yeah.
Right, right. And it's kind of, didn't you model it after the fuzz pedal that you use?
Loosely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of derived from a pedal that's derived from a pedal that's derived from the Univox Super Fuzz, which is
okay,
kind of a
yeah.
One of the more well-known classic fuzz
right, yeah,
circuits.
Yeah.
But it's got some tricks.
Yeah, yeah, it's super cool. I don't actually own one because it didn't really go with the style of my playing. I always thought, like, you know, excuse me, I always wanted to be able to play a fuzz pedal.
Yeah.
But then in the long run, it's like, you know, you really have to have a certain style to really be able to utilize that kind of thing in your playing.
Absolutely. I mean,
yeah.
That pedal especially is, I mean, more so than maybe like a Big Muff, which is kind of, you know, more of like a standard fuzz that
right,
it's fuzzy,
right.
But you can get away with a lot. With that pedal, the Big Spider, you're pretty well confined to single notes, octaves, fifths.
Right.
You know, if you play anything very complicated, it just becomes a noisy wash.
Yeah, it's not a pedal that you can really like play chords on.
Power chords, yes.
Power chords, yes, but not like augmented, you know, anything real complicated.
Yeah, you'll just kind of get a
it just
bunch of
turns
garble.
Into mud. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which I mean, you know, maybe somebody that's a useful feature.
But totally.
I love that circuit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, for the right person, man, it sounds really good. Do you use one when you play?
I do.
You do. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, so well, let's step back just a second here and let's talk about some of the bands that you have been in and how you kind of got started playing. What was kind of the first let's go right to the beginning. How did you start playing music?
My big brother, he's 2.5 years older than me, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
I fell in with some of the other buddies in the neighborhood who were doing band stuff. And
this is in Tacoma?
Where you grew up? South of Tacoma in Lakewood.
Okay. Yep. Oh, Lakewood. All
mm-hmm.
right.
And so that ended up being Botch, which sort of evolved into kind of a more well-known Seattle hardcore band. And
right,
so
right.
So it was like, I mean, even from the very beginning, they were all really talented. Tim was like the jazz band drummer, and Dave was a band guy as well, I believe. And
Your brother.
Let me clarify. Yeah, Dave Knutson, the guitar player.
Oh, okay.
So,
who?
They were all really good from the start, and they were playing shows, you know, these kind of all ages house shows mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. And me and my best buddy Matt Howard, we used to go and kind of like sneak into those shows. They were all, you know, 16, 17, and we were 13.
Right.
And just try and somehow involve ourselves and. So we, of course we wanted to start a band, try and, you know, they can do it, we can do it kind of thing.
Yeah,
and
totally.
So that ended up, evolving into Harkonnen, which is the band we did for 10 years after that, I guess.
Oh, you were actually in Harkonnen for 10 years. That went on for that long.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it was age 14 to 24, I guess. When I
no
think
shit.
Yeah.
No shit. That's amazing. And so, was that the only band that you were involved with for that time?
Pretty much. I guess towards the end of Harkonnen, my brother and myself and Brian from Botch as well and another buddy, Mike Cooper, started a band called Roy.
Mike has been on this show before.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it kind of overlapped with Harkonnen.
Right. Yeah. And I always remember, too, like, I always think back, because my band in college played with Roy.
Yeah.
And I was like, that was the most embarrassing show I think I've ever played, because you guys, you know, you lived over in Tacoma. Mike was going to the same college that I was going to, and we kind of set up this show, Mike and I and Scott Abrams, who has also been a guest on this show.
Nice.
And is very, very dirty. He's a very dirty boy.
Dirty dog. Yep.
but so we set up this show and we were like, well, why don't we close the show, my band, because you guys were only going to play like a 30-minute or 40-minute set or something like that. And we were used to playing like an hour-long set, hour and a half-long set. And so you guys start playing and it is the most rocking like in your face music. Mike Cooper's jumping around and like, you know, just being a drunk fool on bass and stuff. And you guys just blew everybody's minds that night. And then we get up there, my band gets up there with a string quartet and tries to close the show after that. I will always remember that as being just like, oh, okay.
It's a volume wars thing.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. But it was a ton of fun. And actually, Roy, once I heard you guys that night, like, you guys became one of my favorite bands.
Oh, that's
yeah,
good.
Totally. It was so good. So, and I remember too, and we were talking about this before we started the show tonight, about how Harkonnen was, so you were in Harkonnen when Roy kind of started with all these guys, a couple right. of guys from Botch, your brother, mm-hmm. and then Brian Cook, right?
Yep.
And then Mike Cooper. And during your time in Harkonnen, you guys were actually listed in Rolling Stone as one of like the top, what was it? Top 50, top 25 or something like that. Do you remember?
Honestly, I don't even remember. I couldn't remember if it was like a listing like that or if it was just a mention about the record or a review or
yeah,
whatever
yeah.
It was totally.
Well, it was in a list because I remember I took a somebody. Another friend of mine over in college had given me a bunch of back orders of Rolling Stone that he was done with. Oh. And I was looking through it and I was flipping through the pages. I went to the Billboard charts or the Rolling Stone charts, you know, and Harkonnen was on like the top. It was either, I can't remember, top 25, top 50 or something like that. College bands.
That's so weird.
And yeah. Do you remember that?
I do. I mean, there was,
you remember being listed in there?
I remember something being printed in there. I don't remember what it was, but it was just, I think there must have just been some weirdo that worked, one of the 50 people who owned that record by that time.
Right, right.
That happened to work for Rolling Stone and uh-huh. put that in there. I mean, there was no like, I mean, we never played to more than, I'd say like 50 people unless we were opening for a bigger band.
Right, right.
You know, the entire time we existed as a band, so it's
yeah
it wasn't, that doesn't signify any like you know,
that is so funny,
Rolling Stone, you know,
yeah, like, yeah, you know, totally,
that was
totally.
That was a total fluke,
yeah, because like every time I would look back there and I would see bands that I'd never heard of before, mm-hmm. you know, and I had heard Mike Cooper, I think, told me about Harkonnen, told me you were in Harkonnen at that time, and I don't think I'd ever even heard you guys mm-hmm. before then, you know, no offense. No.
I'm not offended at all.
But yeah, just like looking in there, I was like, wow, these guys must be huge, you know? But apparently not.
No.
Apparently not.
No.
Yeah.
Well, we were all pretty heavy at the time. I mean, like,
right, right.
big eaters. But oh. as far as like the band,
yeah, yeah,
like drawing people to concerts or buying records or anything like that.
Yeah. I'm going to promise you this right after that little joke you just made, I'm going to put a rim shot in there and post just so yeah. Yeah.
Auga.
Yeah.
<You're pretty>
good. Yeah. Yeah. Put like a foghorn, mm-hmm. foghorn sound in there. Yeah, that'll work. So what happened with Harkonnen then?
Well, it's kind of weird. All three of us ended up going to school to study electrical engineering and,
All
three of us, yeah. And Casey, the guitar player, was the first one to graduate from Western Washington, which is a school a couple hours away from where the rest of us lived. So
right, right.
We were already kind of having a pseudo long distance existence as a band.
Mm-hmm.
And when he graduated, he was quick to get a job in California. And so he moved down to Silicon Valley and now he's kind of one of the big engineer guys at Apple Computers. So
no shit.
Yeah. And he,
well, maybe we can call him up because we are having a ton of issues getting onto iTunes.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So maybe you give me a little, you know.
He's an audio engineer guy. He could probably help you with your headphones when they stop working or something like that.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, probably not because I'm using an HP. So
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That wouldn't work out, I don't think.
So when he moved, that was kind of the end of the band.
Right,
it was
right.
kind of like, might as well just not do this for a while. So.
And then the drummer, what drummer's name again?
Matt Howard.
Matt. Yep. Matt. And then he kind of, he left down to California too.
He did, yeah.
At some point. Yeah, that was probably long after you guys were...
A couple years later.
Yeah. And then, so you guys formed Roy. Your brother, who was the singer of Botch, was now the drummer.
Right.
Brian Cook playing guitar, Mike Cooper on bass, you on guitar, and everybody just kind of singing.
Yep.
How did you guys write songs for that band?
Well, it kind of started out, I think, just touring around a bunch and you know, Botch and Harkonnen and, you know, getting used to hearing a bunch of heavy bands every night and mm-hmm. sort of got in the van. We'd all listen to kind of more mellow stuff. And
right. Just kind of let your ears just kind of recover a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I can't speak for anybody else, but I kind of got sort of burnt out on, mm-hmm. you know, heavy distorted guitars. And then for a little while there, I was just kind of feeling like I really wanted to do something different or
right,
just be around
right.
something different. And, so it was kind of like I had my thing, like the stuff I was listening to, and I was kind of getting inspired by that. And so I'd come up with a song idea, and then Brian would have his own thing, and he'd have a song idea. So cool. It was kind of like a cluster of, you know, me, Cooper, and Brian just kind of each doing our own sort of...
Songs,
yeah, right, songwriting right. thing, I guess. Yeah. And but, you know, I mean, it was when it came down to it, it was a band, you know, we'd get together and like... You know,
hash shit out a little bit. Yeah, exactly. totally. Well, I mean, it worked really well. It seemed to work really well because you guys had some songs were kind of like more country inspired mm-hmm. too. And I don't know whether that was Cooper or Brian.
I think we all took turns because we get like maybe somebody would do a kind of country-ish kind of thing.
Right, right.
And then the next time somebody else would take it, you know, off on that idea.
Oh, okay.
And so
okay.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it worked really well.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, and you guys actually have a reunion show. Well, not, I don't know whether you want to call it a reunion show or whatever, but that's coming up in December 11th, I want to say.
Sounds about right.
Hell's Kitchen. Right? Yeah.
I think it's the 11th, yeah.
Yeah. We had our, Raid and I actually had our first date at a Roy show.
Whoa, I don't know if I knew that.
Yeah, yeah. And it was great. It turned out really well. We ended up getting married.
It worked.
Yeah, totally. I guess before I forget, like Harkonnen is a Dune reference, right?
Yep, it is. But it was kind of an indirect Dune reference. There was a guy who played guitar in the band real early on, and we were trying to come up with a name for the band, and he had a book of drawings by, is it Geiger, I think? Mm, he did all the drawings mm-hmm. for... Like
Alien and
Alien, yeah.
And
I guess
he designed all the set pieces for Alien, yeah.
And Dune apparently too. So like the spaceships and all
that.
Oh
right, okay.
So there was one of the drawings in there was the house Harkonnen. You know, and so he thought that was an interesting word. I don't know. We were kinda like, yeah, and then I mean, I've never even read the book. I've never made it all the way through the movie.
Are you serious?
I just don't.
Man, see, this is one thing that I did not know about you. Because I always thought, I was like, oh, Ben's a big nerd like me. Like, you know, he...
I guess I just, when it comes to some things, like, I can't get down with... Who's that author that everybody freaks out about? He does all the, like, you know, the crazy science fiction fantasy...
J.R.R. Tolkien?
No,
the, like
more new
Lord
school.
Of Rings. Lord of the Rings.
There's a new school guy that with a real kind of typical name, like Frank Smith or something. I can't remember, but everybody keeps trying to. You should read this book, and
really,
I can't make it through it, and I couldn't do Dune.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. Dune is long, man. Dune is like it really, literally, it took me like probably four or five tries.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
to get through Dune, like I would make it. You know, it was. Sometimes I would make it up to, like, you know, the eighth chapter.
Yeah.
You know, which is relatively short in the life of that book, you know, if you think how big it is. But, yeah, I mean, it's daunting. It's a daunting task.
I think I just...
Taking on something like that.
By the time I was, I don't know, interested in anything like that, I've been too busy to do anything.
Right,
like,
right.
Like, read a book that... Eats up a month of your life.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So once kind of Roy, I don't know if Roy really fizzled out. I mean, you guys are still doing shows periodically.
Just one of those things where, we'll probably do it forever in some capacity.
Right.
If and when.
Because it's just fun. Time. It's a bunch of friends that are getting together and, and just playing music. Right.
Very low
right.
stress, very low expectation.
Yeah, totally. Low expectations.
Yeah.
Right.
It's really important for that band because if you're at that show, you'll see.
No, not at all, man. We had a great time at the last Roy show. So, and I don't know, man, your brother's band, Botch, kind of started a whole bunch of different bands, you know, kind of spawned a bunch of different stuff. Obviously it kind of inspired you with going into Harkonnen.
Absolutely.
And then, Brian went on to, do These Arms Are Snakes. You were in These Arms Are Snakes for a little while too, right? As the drummer?
For a year. Yeah. A year or so. It was pretty much a band-aid situation there.
Really?
Their drummer quit right after they recorded their first full length. And
Okay. I thought you were actually on that first recording.
No, I've never been on anything that they recorded except for a BBC session, but I don't think that ever got released or anything.
Yeah. Did you, but you toured with them, obviously.
That's pretty much what it was. Yeah. About a year and a half of just tour.
Yeah. And was that a fun tour for you?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, it was, for me, because I was kind of just sort of in the band, it's like some of the band problems.
You didn't have to deal with.
I kind of didn't have to deal with them. Yeah, I could just sort of enjoy being,
that's awesome.
Being, you know, traveling around and making friends. Yep.
Yeah, and so you said BBC sessions, so you guys actually, you went with them over to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
It was really fun.
Free ticket over there, huh?
Yeah, and just, you know, time with some really rad dudes and...
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I've got to see some cool stuff that I hadn't seen. And
Right on. And how long was that tour?
I think it was something like 5 or 6 weeks, I want to say. Yeah, it was, it was long enough.
So do you find it, because I never toured with any band that I was with. We never, you know, were that good to do something like that. Or I'm not going to say that good because we were awesome. I just want to get that out
there. Give yourself some credit.
Yeah, yeah. The Huge and Abnormal Ally, great fucking bands. And if you don't know, you know. No, but, you know, I never had that drive to actually, you know, kind of plan stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
But I always felt like I really would have enjoyed going on tour.
Yeah.
Do you like going on tour? Or?
I love it, yeah.
Do you?
I think everybody, if they can, should do something like that. I think it's a really good thing to, you know, to put yourself out of your normal environment in a situation where you're not on vacation. You know what I mean? Where you're,
right.
Like you're kind of working, but I mean the important thing to me, I think, is that you have sort of an agenda. You're at a place to do something. And if you can work it out to where you have enough time surrounding that thing, be it a show or whatever,
then
you can actually kind of get a good or a better perspective on what a place is all about, I think.
And yeah.
So it was kind of, I think I learned a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, even in bands when you're starting out, like even when there's not really a lot of money associated with the tour
There's never money.
Right. But you still have a good time. You still, I mean, and you've been in some bands with some really cool people. It sounds like you've been very close friends with a lot of the people that you've been on tour with too. So.
Yeah, I'm really lucky like that. I mean, I talk to some people who are, you know, maybe their band's doing well or, you know, financially or whatnot, and their shows are big and what, but they're
just can't get along.
Yeah, and I think I'm kind of lucky that I've always got to play music with people that. Nobody was super ambitious about trying to make something a living.
Just count your lucky stars. You've never been in a band with Stephen Malkmus.
Oh, yeah? Is that the word?
Well, hasn't he... He's got this history of like being like just a huge asshole.
Huh. I mean, I guess I could see that.
Yeah.
It seems like a smart guy, though. I bet he's probably... I don't know.
Maybe it's just the chemistry with like everybody else in Pavement too, because I heard like same stories about like the bass player.
I wonder how much of it's, you know, sort of like
just myth,
this is what we should be. I'll be the asshole, you be the.
Oh right,
you know?
yeah,
I
totally.
Don't know. I don't know. I'm just...
Hey man, that's one of my favorite bands, and but I have heard that that guy can be kind of a jerk.
I never met him.
Well, let's take our first break because I am starting to do the pee-pee dance. We've got our bottle of truth serum here.
Another one of those.
yeah. Apparently, I do. And we're here with Ben Varellin. We're gonna play. The first song off of your EP that I have here.
It's a Helmsley record.
Your latest band here, latest incarnation. Helmsley, self-titled EP. We're gonna hear a Weirding Away. So we will be back with you in just a moment. See you then. We are back with Mr. Ben Varellin, master and commander of Varellin Amplifiers in Helmsley.
I have to correct you there. I'm furthest thing from master and commander as far as Helmsley goes.
Well, you think so?
Absolutely.
Is it so? Just like Roy, it's a very collaborative thing that you guys got going here.
I think it's. In a way, it's even more collaborative than Roy was, because Roy was kind of more of a combination of solo ideas, I guess.
Right.
And Helmsley's, none of us could do, finish any of those songs without the other two people, and
yeah.
Nobody's replaceable, so it's like,
So people in Roy were replaceable.
No.
Is that what you're saying?
That applies to Roy, too. But, for example, Cooper... Cooper went off and did the Canon Canyon stuff.
Canon Canyon, yeah, right.
Which I think is better than all the Roy stuff, probably.
I think it's a different style.
Yeah.
Different style.
Similar, but different.
Yeah.
But I mean, he can still write those songs. And, if anybody decided they wanted to stop doing Helmsley, there wouldn't be a Helmsley-like band.
Anymore. Yeah. Well, it's really good stuff, and I love that song. a weirding away. And where do you get your inspiration for some of these songs? I mean, where do all you guys get? You got Dana James is the bass player,
mm-hmm.
and Hosey. How do you?
Madsen Margolis.
Yeah. Madsen Margolis.
Yep.
Yeah, and she's another band that's that Mike Cooper has put on his personal record label, Rural Wolf. She's in Lozen.
Yep.
Also, yep. Now is she the drummer or she is the bass player for that?
She band? Plays bass, guitar, and drums. In that
and
band.
Drums. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow. Wow. So she's a jack of all trades, I guess.
Yep. Yeah. She's a weirdo. Yep.
And an amazing drummer.
Yeah.
I would venture to say. that was Weirding Away by Helmsley, sung by Mr. Ben Varelin over here. And so what's next for Helmsley? You guys are actually getting ready to go into the recording studio.
That's here, right.
Like mm-hmm. we were talking about during while the song was playing here. And and so you guys have gotten some new songs.
Yep, we do.
And do you guys kind of like, are you playing those songs at shows that you're doing now, or?
There's songs that are going to be recorded on this record that we've been playing for about 2 years now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we definitely took a lot of time to get all the songs together for that. So it's a lot of them we've been playing on for a long time.
Right. Right.
So, yeah.
And how'd you get hooked up with Dana and Hosey? How'd you meet them?
I think I met Hosey earlier when I think it was right after I just moved to Seattle, and I came down to Tacoma to see These Arms Are Snakes play a show in Tacoma, and her older band TNA played, and so I got talking to her then and became buddies, and I got to record their band, and so we stayed in touch over the years.
That's when you were working at the Red Room, right?
No, actually,
studio engineer.
It was before I was working at Red Room, but I was recording bands at a studio in Tacoma called Autopsy Room. That was a basement deal. It was,
okay, yeah.
They let me bring my my little 8-track tape recorder down there and record bands. It was awesome. It was a good time.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, you're kind of a jack of all trades too. I mean, you kind of. In the music world, no, not fake, not fake. Don't say that. You went to school and became a what? Electrical engineer,
mm-hmm.
right? And you went to what? UW,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Started this amplifier business. Started making amplifiers. You also worked at well, kind of pseudo worked, quote unquote. You can't see this. You can't see this at home, people. But I'm making quotes on my fingers. And kind of worked at Red Room and then this Autopsy Room that we were talking about.
I mean, that was never like a primary way to make money.
But right.
It was something I did pretty much the entire 8 years I was in school.
Cool, yes. Cool. Yeah. And I mean, it's obviously something that you love. Everything that you've done thus far has been associated with music.
Yep, I'm stuck for sure. Totally.
You're blazing your path or trail.
For better or worse. Yeah, I don't, there's really no getting out of it, I think, at this point.
Could you see yourself doing anything else?
I don't even know where I'd begin. I mean, because, like, you know, sometimes there'll be a rough patch with the business and try and figure out how to, make something else work. And everybody's like, well, you've got a degree in electrical engineering. Why don't you just go get a job like all your smart friends, Matt and Casey? You know, they're doing fine. And
yeah, call up Matt and try to get a job at Cisco.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I could pursue that, I guess, but it just sounds awful to me. I don't know.
Well, hopefully your friends at Cisco and Apple will not be listening to this because they might be very offended, Ben.
Well, they understand.
Yeah, they know. I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do. But you were just telling me that that Varelin Amplifiers, you guys have been now, you've gotten associated with this other amplifier company called Jet City.
Mm-hmm.
Amplification? Is it amplification or just amplifiers?
I believe it is amplification. Okay. I could be mistaken.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I'm just like reciting from memory, seeing a post on Facebook or something like that. But
yeah.
And you made a God, and we were just talking about this during the break, but
it's a mod on one of their designs. So they, Jet City, they're doing this interesting thing where they're getting involved with all of these sort of boutique amp designers from the Northwest.
Right, right.
Soldano, yeah. THD, and having those guys do designs that they have manufactured, and they can do things a bit more affordably, and so they're able to make these really competitively priced amps that are designed by these really smart guys. And they, I guess, as just kind of a little extra thing they're doing is they're offering these mods on some of their existing designs. So they asked me to do a mod, and so now they offer the mod on their website. And
yeah, yeah. And they're using one of your mods. They're actually stamping the heads.
We're making all that.
Oh, you're making all that. You're even doing the cabinetry for those.
Just
for
the baffle. Just so if we make the little plate, brand it, and so then.
Right, right.
So now this amp that would normally have a Tolexed face plate now has a birch stained branded face plate. That,
yeah, and that's something that your amps have become known for. Is having that branded, like hot iron brand of the big V.
Yeah, yeah.
Or now, I guess on your amps, it says Varellen on it. Yeah, which is really cool.
Thanks.
I think, yeah, it's totally, like, rustic. You know, it's just, your amps, like, I equate your amps as to being, like, just these tools that not only sound amazing, but they're rugged and they're durable.
Yep.
You know?
That's the idea.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, you've got a slew of bands on the Varellen Amplifiers website that are just, you know, just really happy with these things.
Yeah, it's been a good response from people. And the nice thing is, the people that it appeals to the most, I think, are people who do play in bands and do, you know, go out and play shows and go on tour.
Yeah, working bands that are, you know, doing it.
Yep, yep. And
for lack of a better term.
Yep, and it's cool that that those amps are getting used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can find that on VarellenAmplifiers.com, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's kind of get back to Helms Ali. You guys are preparing to go back into the studio. You've got some songs that you've been working on, like we were talking about before. And no new stuff yet, right? To bring to Air Raid.
No, yeah.
But hopefully soon we can hear some of this stuff, right?
Yeah, I think. Yeah. It's hard to say how long it's going to take for everything to get, you know, released and whatnot, but
right.
Yeah, I really don't have much information about that either. I got nothing. Nobody knows.
Man, this is just bullshit here. No, but you were saying during the break too that that you guys normally will go to one studio. You're gonna do the main tracks at what was the studio?
Litho.
Litho, owned by Stone Gossard here in Seattle, Fremont neighborhood.
Yep.
Same as your shop. And then you do other tracking at another studio called the Red Room.
Right.
Which I have played in before. Well, I guess not the newest location. Are they still above your old shop on Aurora?
Yep, they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that, who runs the Red Room?
Two guys, Matt Bayless and Chris Common, who are both recording engineers, producer guys in town.
Right, right. And Chris Common took over for you as the drummer for These Arms Are Snakes for a little while, right?
Yep, that's right. Till they were done. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And now, so I mean, how does that stuff work? Like you were saying out back that you'll do some stuff at one studio because they have what the other studio doesn't have, and the other studio has what this studio doesn't have. And I mean, that's gotta be a long drawn out process a little bit.
Well, I mean, it's not like we're driving across the country to get, you know, the benefits of recording at some really cool room or something like that. I mean, Red Room and Litho aren't too far from each other, and they're both very close to me.
Yeah.
And,
which is what matters.
Which is what matters. Yeah. Everybody else lives down south now, but
yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I guess the reason for going to one studio over the other for different things is mostly what it comes down to is, I think just Litho is just a really awesome tracking room. It's a really comfortable place, and they've got like a really cool drum tracking room. And,
right, right. Know.
And then Red Room is just, they probably have more gear than anybody else in town. It's the place is just...
Well, and they've got a whole setup of Varelin amplifiers too. Like Matt Bayless is featured on your website, is and he's like sitting in front of a whole bunch of like Varelin gear.
They've been real supportive. Too. Yeah,
that's awesome. That's really cool. And you get and so I mean, do you find it easier to go and work with people that you've worked with before, or is it always fun for you to like go to new studios? Or I mean, these are places like Litho. You've recorded there before. Roy recorded there.
Harkonnen
recorded there. Now Helmsley is recorded there. So is it easier for you to like go to these studios that you've been with before, work with the same people? I mean, I'm imagining that it is.
Well, I mean, as far as a studio, that's not the most important thing. I mean, Helmsley did the last record at a place called Soundhouse that, I guess I'd been there once before too, but it's not like a super familiar spot. I don't think that's the biggest deal. But as far as who we work with, I definitely really like working with Matt. He's just one of those really kind of super genius guys, technically, and the sort of human thing. He's in tune to what's going on with the people in the band.
Yeah,
which makes him a really good producer, you know.
Right, and was he part of that whole kind of... I know that Dave, that was in Botch with your brother, is in Minus the Bear. Mm-hmm. Matt was in Minus the Bear for a while too. Is that how you guys kind of met?
I met Matt on the set of this really silly, some movie that a friend of ours made. This movie, it was kind of like a punks versus straight edge kids kind of. It was kind of hilarious, but somehow we both were all mutual friends from whoever. And,
right.
So that's how me and Matt met, was doing that. But it was pretty much because he was doing all the Botch stuff, and you know, I was kind of tagging along with those guys doing lights at their shows, and Matt was coming along to do sound, and so we got to be buddies, and then he recorded Harkonnen, and I guess that's how we met. Yeah.
Cool. And so you were saying too, back to kind of the Varelin amplifiers part, like Matt Bayless has bought a bunch of, is supporting you guys, your business, and buying up a bunch of stuff and using that in his studio.
Mm-hmm.
And you were just telling me too that you guys have you're getting into the next NAMM show.
Mm-hmm.
That's NAMM.
That's right.
Right, and that's like I don't know, how would you explain NAMM to us here?
I've never been, but if it's what I think it's going to be worse than Star Trek. It's going to be like all the ponytails and flip-flops and flame on.
Oh, God, yeah. Shirts, yeah, totally. Know, like just, silk shirts with flames on it, like bowling shirts.
The midlife crisis convention. It's going to be really depressing. And
Yeah. Well, it's basically like a musician's trade show.
It's a musician's trade show, yeah. So it's all the companies that do any products related to music, pro audio, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's huge. It's this ginormous complex. And so it's like, I mean, it's just going to be insane.
And where's that at? Where's it held?
Anaheim, California.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're bringing a bunch of stuff, like... We're
going to be pushing the Meat Smoke.
Okay.
This year is going to see us launching, I guess the word, a product line of Meat Smokes, which is something we've never done with anything. We always build things to order as they're ordered.
Meat Smoke is the bass amplifier,
The
right?
Meat Smoke is a 300-watt all-tube.
Jesus Christ.
bass and or guitar amp. It's got an overdrive channel. It's foot switchable.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And, have they all been like that, from the start? Like, did Meat Smokes start out with that?
They've
with
been slowly evolving over time. Last year or so, we've been doing a foot switchable version of the Meat Smoke and calling it the Meat Smoke OD. And,
nice.
But
nice.
Starting next year, it's just the Meat Smoke is going to be from now on, a two-channel amp.
That is really cool. That is really cool.
There's some weird things. We found these tubes that these guys are making. I'm trying to get too technical, but I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, well, the show thus far has been just like totally nerdy music show, so yeah. This is perfect. I'm enjoying myself. I don't care if the listeners enjoy it or not. So.
Well, it's called a KT-120, and
okay.
Tung Soul's making them, and they are the highest power handling tube in that family of audio tubes.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, typically like a 300-watt all-tube amp, like the SVT, which is a really popular one, they use a tube called a 6550, and that one has a maximum power handling capability of about 35 watts, and this tube can handle 60 watts.
Okay.
So it's considerably higher powered, and even though we're getting the same output power from the amp, the tubes themselves are very comfortable in doing that. So what that means is that the tubes are going to last a long time, and they're, you know, people aren't going to have to spend a couple hundred dollars every year or so when they need to replace their tubes.
Okay. So when you say like, okay, so the Meat Smoke is a 300 watt amp.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you just said that the tubes are only 60 watt.
Right.
So do you have to have enough tubes to get up to that 300 watt mark, I guess? Or
it's not,
how does that work?
It's how much time do you have?
Oh man, we got all night, buddy.
it's pretty the way it works isn't quite that simple. I mean, it's a 6 power tube circuit.
Okay.
But you don't just add.
So there's 6 tubes in the head of this amp.
That's right.
Yeah. That's a lot of tubes.
Power tubes.
Okay, power tubes. Those are the
big ones.
Those are the big ones. Okay.
Yeah, there's 6 of the big ones. In this case, the real big ones, because we've got the KT-120s. But another thing about those is they're new. They're a new tube, and nobody's using them for an instrument.
Really?
As far as I know.
So what are people using them for then? Just
They've only been
on gigantic box televisions or what?
No, they've been actually building them for about 6 months or selling them.
Oh, okay.
So they've really caught on quickly with the hi-fi guys. So some guys are putting them in hi-fi amps for their houses. You
gotcha.
Know,
gotcha.
Music listening, but they sound great. They sound really full. They have like a little bit more happening in the upper frequencies than the 6550, and they should last forever, which is really exciting.
Yeah, that's really cool. And even for a loud band like your band, Helms of Lee, like those things will just keep on kicking for a good, 5 years, something like that?
The tubes?
Yeah.
The tubes, I mean, you know, it'll take 5 years to do a study, but I think that from what our experiments have shown us, it seems like the tubes failing from electrical abuse, which is, you know, if you run the tubes close to their maximum power handling and they're constantly heating up and cooling down the electrodes, the pieces of metal in the tubes.
Right.
That's, you know, one of the things that eventually the tubes start to go.
Yeah.
But with these tubes, they're made so robustly, and we are running them fairly conservatively. The idea is that they're going to be nice and comfortable. They might last, you know, 10 times as long as a set of 6550s would. Granted, they're still made out of glass.
Right.
If you drop the thing,
it's going to break.
It's going to break.
It's very thin glass, too, for all of you still listening who don't know what we're talking about. Very thin glass on these tubes.
Yeah, these ones are, they've got a pretty thick glass envelope compared to some other tubes, but it's still glass.
Yeah. So. Well, that's really cool, man. And you know, I'm realizing right now that a bunch of our listeners probably they don't even have the slightest inkling to what we're talking about
right
now. Mm-hmm. So maybe we should move back to Helms of Lee. And I know. I'm really sorry. But I got to say, I mean,
this flux capacitor.
right. In a 1984 DeLorean, and I'm planning on making some cool shit. Yeah.
No, I apologize for nerding out.
No, not at all.
Sorry.
Not at all.
Sorry.
No, I'm the one that needs to apologize because I wanted you to go there. I pushed you in that direction. But let's go. Let's listen to the second Helms of Lee song that we got tonight. We're gonna hear Paraphrase. It's another one off of the EP that I have. I'm sorry, man. I don't have your the full album.
I'm not offended.
Yeah, but at the last show, we went to your show at the Black Lodge, mm-hmm. and Canyon played. It was right at the end, I think, of Cooper's tour.
Yeah,
quite a few months ago, actually. Mm-hmm. It was like still summer, I guess.
Yep.
And you guys put on a great show.
Thanks, man.
And I bought one of the records, the LP, even though I don't have a record player yet. But it was really cool because, like, on one side of the record has, like, all the songs on it, and then the other side is, like, this etched print on it.
Actually, what you bought is the predecessor to this demo CD.
Oh, really?
So
okay.
It's the exact same songs. Is this
okay?
It's on vinyl,
and now I feel like a dipshit because I haven't listened to it. And I didn't know that.
That's okay. Like I said.
But how did you? I mean, because it's really cool. Like on one side of the record, there's this etched, like, or I don't know, what would you call it? Like a mm-hmm. sketching, a picture.
It's etched artwork.
Yeah. So how did you do that on a pressing like that?
We didn't, but our friend, her name's Faith Kalachia, and she lived with Dana and myself in a house, and when we were doing the demo and talking about doing vinyl, and it was probably her idea, and mm-hmm. maybe she offered to do it out of the blue, but so she basically got a hold of the the plates, I guess, that they actually used to press the records.
Right.
And so one side has the program material for the songs, for four songs, and then on the other side it's just a blank piece of metal, and she actually just etched the artwork directly onto it, committed it
onto the plate.
Yeah, and then so when they actually had the records manufactured, the artwork shows up.
Is really cool. Yeah, even though I haven't listened to it, it's an amazing record. Yeah, but apparently it's the same as the EP that I have here on CD anyway. So, So this is Paraphrase by Helms Alee, and we'll be back in a moment with Ben Verellen. See you then. Thank you. Okay, so we're back. Another great song by Helmsley, paraphrase. I just want to say it's been a real pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for coming on. I know that you're a busy guy. We were talking about that during the break, and you got a lot of shit going on. So I'm honored that you could, find it in your heart to come on to the Air Raid podcast.
It's good of you to have me down here.
Yeah. And now officially you're our sponsor.
Officially.
Right. Yeah. Officially.
Proud sponsor
of the Air Raid podcast. So Ben, where can we find about, or out about, boy, this truth serum is really just
effective.
Getting to my tongue here. Yeah. It's very effective. That's for damn sure. So where can we find out about Helmsley? Where can we find out about there it goes again? Where can we find out about Virellan Amplifiers and everything else?
Well, the business Virellan Amplifiers stuff, you can find out all the up to date stuff at VirellanAmplifiers.com. And there's a Facebook page, and
we can friend you.
You can friend us.
Yeah,
and we're friends. and there's usually people like to post photos of them and their amps, and you can see some of the more oddball stuff that comes out of the shop.
Right.
But contact info is on the website. And
now, are you guys still doing, like, I do remember, I don't mean to butt in here, but were you guys still doing, like, it was like a social network that you'd started really quick?
We did do that, and then realized how much more effective it would be to just throw ourselves into the Facebook thing.
Right. Okay. So that was before the Facebook. Yeah.
Rather than get people to sign themselves up onto a whole nother social network that they would then have to log on to
participate,
make it simple. Yeah.
Totally. So where can we find out about Helmsley?
There's a MySpace page. You can check up with Hydrohead as far as record release stuff.
Right.
They've got a website. Helmsley's, I don't know. There's not a website for us. There's not really a Facebook account. So, I don't know,
but you got the MySpace.
Got the MySpace.
That's a great spot to hear new music by Helmsley, and figure you guys are up on that, consistently, like, plugging new shows and things like that, right?
As much as possible.
Okay. And when's your next show? When's the next show coming up for Helmsley?
Helmsley's playing a show on Saturday night, this coming week. At New Frontier Lounge in Tacoma.
Great. That's perfect, because this show is the podcast is going up on Sunday.
So you can see us last night. Be there. Don't forget.
Damn it. I'm so sorry. Well, like I said before, if you have that hot tub time machine, you can you can go back to tomorrow night. Yeah. Or yesterday night.
Yeah.
And check that out.
Yeah.
In Tacoma.
See you there.
Tacoma, Washington. So, sorry, Brian and Missoula, you cannot go see that show.
No!
But, once again, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks
really appreciate it. Hopefully we'll have you on again before the Roy show in December.
Sounds cool.
Be able to talk with you and Mike Cooper. And hopefully maybe the other guys in the band, too, can come along. And that's December 11th. Maybe I should check that out. December, yeah. We'll just say right now it's December 11th. We're going to make that decree right now.
Proceed at your own risk. Check your facts. Yeah.
Hell's Kitchen in Tacoma for Roy. We're going to go out today with Borrowed Wind by Helmsley. And make sure to check them out, guys. An amazing live show. I gotta say, amazing live show. We loved it when we went and saw you guys at Black Lodge. Of course, you can check us out at air-raid.net. You can email me, Aaron, at air-raid.net with your show ideas and your praise. Don't email me if you don't like the show, because then, you're just an asshole. So it's been great having you on, if you're not an asshole. And we will see you next week. This is Borrowed Wind by Helmsley. Have a good one.